Welcome to Entrepreneur Eats, a conversation about business and community with a side of eats. My name is Deanna Smith, and I'm your host. Hi, I'm Deanna Smith, and this is Entrepreneur Eats, and I have Richard Marks as my special guest today. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Deanna. How are you?
I'm doing super good.
Great.
So, it's the holiday season. Thanksgiving was great. I hope yours was, too.
It was.
And the holiday festivities are about to happen with Christmas and New Year's. But, you know, as all that fun stuff happens and we are really having life in general, what does life look like for Richard
during this holiday season?
Yes, and beyond.
Well, you know, to your point, life has, you know, many seasons, and the holiday seasons, in theory, it sounds great, but, you know, I've been lifing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, the holiday season, traditionally, things have been done a certain way in my household up until a couple of years ago, when there's been a drastic change. As you very well know, my wife, Elisa, got diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Yes, I'm so sorry to hear.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And because of that, you know, she's been placed in a skilled nursing facility since then. And it's really interesting, as we enjoy those many holiday seasons in life, it has been somewhat of not necessarily a struggle, but I'm trying to decide, what do I want new tradition to be like moving forward? And so I have five children. Three of my daughters live here. I have a son in Branson, Missouri, and one in Phoenix. And this particular Thanksgiving, I just sort of hung out at home, and I was invited to a few of my friends to come and hang out with them. And I even felt some kind of way about that, because I didn't know those folks. I knew one person. I didn't necessarily know the family. I sort of ended up with another friend of mine in Encinitas, at least for a little bit. And even for Christmas, I haven't decided yet, because trying to find this new space for tradition just simply is somewhat of a distance to me. It's not really so important. Mm-hmm. You know, I do believe in celebrating others and celebrating the holidays, but that area just sort of uncertain. But life for Richard holistically, it's exciting.
That's wonderful to hear.
And I'm very optimistic about the present as well as what the future holds. And so, contrary to, you know, trying to figure out this whole holiday thing, I'm really enjoying the moments that are given.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of what it is all about, in the moment, enjoying what you actually have.
Yes, I agree with you. About 2.5 years ago, I had the opportunity, as you know, I have a training company, and I had the opportunity to spend about 10 days in Bremerton, Washington, training the Navy on two topics. One was managing stress, and this topic was for all the leaders, and the other topic was just managing stress for leaders. That was the other one. The other one was managing stress. And in my research, I found an organization called the Stress Management Institute. And this is what I found, that most of our stress and stressors are self-induced. Sort of ties back to your point, you know, living in the moment is really important. You know, I believe in planning for the future by all means, but some of those things of uncertainty and ambiguity can freak me out, create some anxiety, some sleepless nights.
Sure.
Especially when I was going through the challenges with Elisa and her health. It's like, how am I going to do this? What is life going to be like? I didn't plan for it, didn't predict it, etc. But what I found is that, you know, if I can change my perspective as it pertains to these difficult conditions that I'm contending with right now, you know, I could actually literally change my experiences and also minimize my stress. And so there are moments of stress. I call it healthy stress. I do have that. That keeps me focused and disciplined and have that great tenacity. But to the point of being stressed out, I can feel that coming up, and I can literally shift that in a way where it's more manageable, where I'm managing it versus managing me. Because when I'm stressed out, it's just like I'm short-tempered, direct to the point, can even offend, because I'm just so focused or upset about X, Y, or Z. And those moments do come by all means, but I'm more able to manage them now than ever before.
Wow, that's good. Where's the line in the sand between healthy stress and not healthy stress?
There's a theory. I think the psychologists are Yorkies and Dorks, if I'm not mistaken. I could be butchering that. But anyway, they have this, what they call an optimal level of stress. It's sort of like a bell curve. Mm-hmm. And so to the left of that bell curve is minimum stress, where there's apathy, lack of engagement, you really don't care, nonchalant. That's not good either, because you just simply don't care, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then to the extreme, to the right, is that anxiety, that really stressful and stressful situation where you're stressed out and it's hard to eat and whatever characteristics are connected to being extremely stressed. So this optimal level of stress is right in the middle, where no one should know you better than you, right?
Sure.
And so we all have our triggers. And so when I begin to and sort of increase my level of stress, and I can feel those triggers coming on, the anxiety, lack of patience, and all the other things of that nature, I've been able to find that sort of middle ground, not to go beyond it, mm-hmm. and begin to manage it. And of course, that's with mindfulness, that's with proper rest, that's with exercise, that's with prayer, that's changing my mindset, opposed to imagining worst case scenario.
Sure.
Is also to allow myself to imagine best case scenario and navigate through both of those scenarios, mm-hmm. not just one. You know, we have the tendency to think worst case scenario, and that's where we land, and then all of a sudden things are out of control.
Sure.
I do allow myself to go there for a moment, but also, again, equally allow myself to imagine the best case scenario, and usually I land somewhere right in the middle.
So that actually lends back to living in the moment and knowing yourself, because we know ourselves the best.
Yes.
And knowing our triggers. Those are the key things that we have to be mindful of.
Yes, I agree with you. That takes me back to, you know, the concept of emotional intelligence. One of those constructs are self-awareness. Self-awareness is understanding your mood, your actions, your motivations, understanding you.
Mm-hmm.
However, or in addition, so not only should we understand ourselves, but what might be the impact on others in that aspect? And so, and that impact should be positive.
Sure.
Constructive. Can be confrontational, but it doesn't mean that it's negative.
And so many people don't realize their actual impact on other people, especially in the moment.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And that's a challenge,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, when things are beautiful and the conversations are easy, I mean, there's no challenges there. But when there's moments of stress or conflict or tension, you know, to your point, we sometimes lose it and just tell our truth, you know, and we're entitled to that, but sometimes miss how that might impact others. And so that's also, again, is just a very important internal regulator that we are encouraged to be aware of and think through it before we actually just say those things, which is another component of, it's called self-management.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ability to suspend judgment, to think before you act. Many of us have been told never judge a book by its cover,
sure.
but our natural instinct is to do just that.
Mm-hmm.
And so self-management helps control that instinct to just want to go off or share your truth. Hey, I feel better. You know, you might, but you just cause, you know, a yeah. tragedy in the background.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Trail of destruction.
Absolutely. It's all around me. What's going on?
Yeah. Wow, you have such insight. How did you get to be so insightful and so educated?
That's a very interesting question, because as I reflect on that, you know, we all have our life story, and, you know, part of that was, you know, after my mom had me at a very young age, a couple years after, she moved to Chicago. I was raised by my grandparents. I did not know my dad until I was around 10 years old. And so I was raised in this sort of, you know, place where my grandparents, they taught me nothing but love. So no challenges there, but I still have that strong desire and want to be with my parents.
Sure.
And they were never married. And so when those relationships began to build in terms of me getting to know my mom and later getting to know my dad, I learned what I know now as unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a way for me to really settle my own level of understanding. I could not change the situation that I was in, but I did have some say-so. on how I approach the present and even the future interactions with mom and dad. And I knew that I loved them and I desired that sort of their love and their support and their approval. But again, we didn't live together. And so I think even in that interesting time, it taught me a lot. And then as I began to mature as a young man, and I fathered early, I married early, still getting to know my dad, I realized that I didn't have a whole lot of control in some cases of what happened in my life. Some of it was self-inflicted by all means, but those other things that were happening in life where I had no control over. And I knew that I did not enjoy being sad. I did not enjoy being stressed out. I did not enjoy being mean. That's just not how I am wired. And so I became, you know, I always was just nice. I'm a nice guy, not to be taken advantage of. Let me be clear to all the listeners, but I am a nice guy. And I'm thoughtful, considerate of others. I try to be. And as I learn about other people, I've learned how they want to be treated and that we're all wired different, but in the same token, we have more in common than not.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I began to learn about business and became a business professional, I was in the wireless space after I served from the Army. I was in the wireless space, and because I was building these relationships with people throughout the organization, there were opportunities to get promoted. And it wasn't because I was the best, I was meeting and exceeding my quota, and that's how we got promoted back in the day in sales. If you do your job well, you get promoted. However, I was in the wireless technology space, and there was a lot of folks that had a lot more knowledge than I did about that space. However, people feedback to the organization, to my leaders, were like, hey, we like Richard. He's a motivator. He listens to us. And that was just sort of my default sort of personality. But little did I know that was actually a skill, a leadership skill, people skills, soft skills, emotional intelligence. I didn't know that. I'm just doing what I thought I was hired to do. But in addition to that, I knew that I needed those people to help me to get the job done. So I learned how to humble myself very quickly. And then all of a sudden, I began to get a plethora of leadership opportunities. I replaced a lot of leaders. And it wasn't because they were not meeting, exceeding their goals and objectives. It was how they were doing it. And morale was in the toilet with them, and people were scared. They were walking on eggshells. And so I replaced those leaders and just began to treat them like they were people of value and substance, because they are. And that created just tons of opportunity.
Do you think that your relationship and your upbringing with your grandparents being at their time in their life contributed to all of these life skills that you have?
By all means, I am a sum of many parts, yes, as I would like to say. So when you see me, you see my grandparents, mm-hmm, you see my high school principal, you see my parents, you see you. I mean, you see a plethora of folks that have had a positive influence in my life. You know, I didn't get here on my own, but I am a lifelong learner. I did attend some college, but then I dropped out. And then I spent time in corporate America, and I began to just hone in on my people skills. And ironically, that's what I do professionally, and that's what I get paid for, mm-hmm, is helping folks become either better leaders, better individuals, improve or enhance their people skills. And now that's my lifelong mission. I want to do that, and I am doing that, hopefully worldwide. That's the goal, is to help people be better for others, to include themselves.
Yeah, that's a great goal.
Yeah, thank you.
What are the challenges in working with people and helping them understand your thought process and your training?
Well, I think it will go back to something you and I spoke about, that level of self-awareness. Because when I often help people navigate through conflict, I often help people work through difficult situations. And for them, it's the most difficult moment, it's horrible. And that's when I get the call. So I get the call for the messy stuff, when HR and the leaders of the organization said, we don't know what else to do. I get that phone call and I love it. Only because these experiences that I have literally lay out a roadmap or a blueprint to navigate through these complexities. But what I find difficult most with many is their lack of self-awareness. They can easily point the finger of the other party or group or what they're doing. And while life is so horrible and difficult and miserable, whatever it might be, lack of trust, etc. But rarely do they see their level of contribution in that that interaction. And so of all of the conflict resolution opportunities I have had, and there's been a plethora of them, both parties are contributing factors of the conflict that they're in 100% of the time, but they don't see it. You know, they tell me, Rich, if it wasn't for this person, if they would do X, Y, or Z, life would be perfect. And then vice versa, the other person is telling me the exact same thing. If it wasn't for this person, life would be X, Y, or Z. But they're both contributing factors. And so what I've learned is that if I begin to push too quickly, there's a pushback, right? And so I go in with basic knowledge that is almost impossible to push away. And so I start with a statement, something very similar to this is, we don't see things how they are, we see things how we are. And then I just ask a question to that person, is there any truth to that statement? And the answer is a yes 100% of the time. And then my next question, well, is there any risk? And the answer is also yes. And then I ask, well, what might be the risk? And the risk is, well, I may not see the whole picture. I may not see things from that person's perspective. And so I use tools like that to sort of break down that ego. There's an author by the name of Ray Dialo. He states that human beings struggle, perhaps suffer, in two areas. Those two areas are blind spots, also known as a scotoma. But a blind spot, simply put, is we don't know what we don't know until we realize we don't know it, right? I've been hearing that since I was a kid. And the other area that we struggle in are our egos. And our egos want to be right. I mean, we're smart, we're intelligent people. And those two things get in the way sometimes to our own demise often. So I don't see the world the way that other people might see it. I see the way I'm wired and I'm right and they're wrong. But ironically, they think they're right and we're wrong. And so I just use those type of concepts. And then I also introduced the construct of emotional intelligence. You and I talked about self-awareness, self-management. I talk about social awareness. And social awareness is the ability to understand the emotional reactions of other people, treating people according to how they are wired, and showing them empathy. And I find that a lot of folks lack the ability to show others empathy. And empathy just says, I care about you. But when we do not show empathy to the other person, party, or group, and we may justify it, it's almost a disrespect to the other person, mm-hmm. and they don't receive that very well. And the other construct is social skills. And social skills is the ability to build rapport, find common ground, and work through these challenges. And so, as you know, I did a TEDx talk back in August. And the TEDx talk is entitled, How to Have Collaborative Conversations in a Politically Divisive World. And I took that topic purposely because I saw all of the discord that politics does to families and to people that I love and respect, etc. And it's a horrible thing. And without those constructs of emotional intelligence and other things that we will probably get into, we almost set ourselves up for failure and constant conflict and bickering. And so when I just lay down those basic principles, and then lastly, I ask people, how do you want to show up? You know, we can sometimes be so aggressive. We may think it's assertive, but that's a different topic. But we come across so aggressive to the other person, party, or group, trying to validate our truth, prove our point. And there's a place and time for that. But again, unaware how it's impacting that other person, party, or group. And when we do that, again, it creates more conflict and discord. And if we're assertive or aggressive, we have no problem in speaking up for ourselves. But people are equally submissive, and they avoid conflict. They don't want to have that level of interaction, and that actually causes more conflict. And so what I've learned to do, Deanna, is just simply meet people where they are, without judgment, giving them the benefit of the doubt, converting frustration into curiosity. And when I do that, it builds trust. And when that happens, people are more than willing to share what they think and feel, and they're more inclined to be open for suggestions and recommendations. That's all that I do. I just make them.
That's all you do.
That's all I do. And it's up to them to move forward with that or not.
Yeah. It's all in the delivery and the approach and the delivery.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you've mastered it. I think you wrote a book about something like this, right?
Yes. Expect great things to happen. 5 core principles of highly effective business professionals.
Awesome. Where do I find this book?
The book is on Amazon. It's on Kindle. And it's also on Audible. I did the audio version of the book as well. Okay. And of course, I have my own personal stash for autographs and things of that nature.
Oh, good. So I have your book, and I very much enjoyed it.
Thank you.
What's next after the book?
Well, now is the workbook. Mm-hmm. So I am also a trainer for other organizations. I'm a fan of Ken Blanchard, for example. Mm-hmm. I'm certified on his material. And I'm also a student on how he manages certain components of his book or his business. So many of Ken's legendary trainings started off as a book. Then it was converted to a training. Now it's international. So I took that sort of learning page and incorporated that with my book. So my book is completed. My book was completed May of 2022. And I just finished the workbook from my book. So the goal is to allow folks to read my book and then use the workbook to walk them through the different 5 principles and really allow them to journal and navigate through life complexities. And then the other goal of the workbook is to, which I have done, is convert it into a training. So the goal is to train on the 5 core principles of my book, and hopefully in the future state, the goal is for it to be so widely popular where other folks, facilitators, trainers, would want to be certified on my material and then be trained by me and then go out and deliver it. So the goal is to convert this into a reoccurring revenue opportunity. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite there yet, but that's the vision that I have, at least for the book. And there's more books inside of me, you know, just based on those complicated opportunities I have with working with others. The goal is to summarize that in form of a book as well, because these opportunities I have to work on for those clients, it's their most difficult, challenging moment. I mean, we don't know what else to do, and literally about giving up or quitting or just doing something that they don't really want to do. And so when I have those opportunities to work with those difficult ones, it's again literally a blueprint after every unique case that I have to share that with other folks as well. And that's what I do as, you know, with repeat clients. You know, I'm learning from those clients, those existing clients, and then I apply that to new clients. But the goal is to push it out more broadly. So the thought is to write a couple more books, diving deeper into those constructs to hopefully give people and organizations a way to navigate through life complexities.
Can you give us an example or a few examples of your worst case scenarios of how you've come into a company and you saw the situation, assessed and delivered whatever expertise that you could get them through their challenges?
Yes, by all means. As a matter of fact, I just finished perhaps my most complicated case yesterday.
Wow.
I started with this particular organization back in August, and I got the phone call and they said, Richard, we were recommended by you from another client, and we think that we need team building. I'm like, okay, great. So tell me about that. Why do you think that you need team building? And their response was, well, there's a lot of gossip, backbiting, there's a lot of frustration, there's a lot of arguing, there's a lack of trust. People are not completing assignments. And I said, okay. And I was speaking with the two leaders of the organization. And my question was to them, is the leadership team demonstrating these same characteristics? And the answer was yes. Okay. And I said, okay, well, before we do this team building exercise, and I appreciate what you folks are telling me, I need to have some conversation with your employees. And so I gave them this proposal, and it was a five-phase approach. So phase one was to interview all of the employees involved. I refer to them as one-on-ones to get their perspective. And I say that because leadership, where they do have a pulse on how things are, it's their version. But when I speak to the employees, they give me a totally different viewpoint. And from the employee's perspective, the leaders are the issue. From their perspective, and from the leader's perspective, it's the employees. Again, there's that conflict again. The next phase of this was one-on-one coaching. And so of the group that I was working with, I identified about 75% of the people where I need to sit down and schedule some one-on-one coaching. And those coaching ranges from 3 sessions to 6 sessions, depending on the severity of the situation and where these individuals were sort of on the spectrum of their people skills. And as I shared with you earlier, people are easy to point out the problem with others, but they're not looking internally. And so once we finished that, I did another set of coaching, but this is called group coaching. And so these are the folks that have more influence in the organization than anyone. And one particular person was an employee, zero authority, but this particular employee had more influence on the team than the leader.
Wow.
That was absolutely amazing. And I don't think I've ever saw that before to the extreme.
Uh-huh.
And this person was very abrasive, very direct, to the point he cared so much about the organization is that he put himself at risk, because he could stand up for himself, he would stand up for the team, but he was so aggressive in his communication style, and in many cases he was right in terms of the issues and challenges, but leadership could not hear it because how he came across. And he found the problem with every single thing. So whatever leadership wanted to do, he would combat it. Well, you should do it this way, that's wrong. And it became us against them. And he was excited about that. Mm. But as we began to dive deeper into our conversations, he began to share with me that, hey, Richard, you know, I have an anger problem. You know, my brother has an anger problem, my family, and it has impacted his family. And so the journey that we took is to just really assess how has this anger, this frustration, this passion and purpose that he so happened to have, how does that impact your personal life? And it's constant arguing, and his wife is upset, children upset. I mean, it's impacting his health, right? And so people don't often realize hanging on to that anger and that frustration, where you have a right to do so, how's that impacting you, number one? And how might that be impacting your other spheres of influence, in this case, your loved ones?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a very difficult case, just that individual.
Sure.
But we made headways. And what I encourage this individual to do, where you can still help your others, but first and foremost, I want you to help yourself. And this person gave me some insight, so I get to know people personally as well. He also told me that he was a coach, a softball coach. And I said, okay, tell me about that. So he's about team, he's about support, he's about, you know, unity, etc. I said, if you had a member of your team that you're coaching act this way, the way that you're sharing with me how you've been interacting with your team, what would you do? I just want to hear your perspective.
Oh boy.
And that internal insight hit him like a ton of bricks. I would not tolerate. I would not accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you doing this?
Right.
Right. He was so caught up in the cause to fix things. It was actually, he was doing it in a very broken way.
Mm-hmm.
So after we completed that, session four was now, or phase four was now, the organization is ready for training. After we've done the one-on-ones and the coaching session, people are ready. They can now receive the information that was, you know, the training deck was done months ago, but they were not ready to receive it. So I have to prepare people to accept this level of information, soft skills, people skills, emotional intelligence, navigating through conflict. These are very simple processes, but if you don't break down those barriers, it's almost possible for it to be absorbed. And then finally, phase five is reoccurring coaching, because now that these seeds are planted, we are now making some progress. One of the ways for it to be sustainable is to just continue to follow up periodically, not as much as the coaching I did prior to, but, you know, once a month, once every 2 months for some other folks, just to want to make sure they're staying course, because we have the tendency to go back to what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing, I encourage people to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And that brings me to a quote. It's in a book called The Growth Mindset. The growth mindset is looking at situations, especially difficult situations, as an opportunity for you to learn, grow, change for the better, focusing your attention on improving yourself instead of changing or blaming anyone else. And this growth mindset makes us extremely uncomfortable, because I can blame you, I can point fingers at you, and if you would just do X, if you would just do Y, but what if you don't? We can't change people. But we can change our perspective. We can change ourselves, our viewpoint, how we absorb this. We can change how we're going to stress out about this or not. Those things we do have control over, but it's a very difficult concept to hold on to. But when you begin to constantly work on yourself and continue to hold on to that concept, you'll begin to focus on yourself and you realize that, wait a minute, I can literally change this most difficult situation I'm contending with right now at this very moment if I just simply change my mindset and my approach. I can change it instantly. That's the power of the growth mindset. Easier said than done, just for clarity.
Most definitely. Yeah, it's hard for us to look within ourselves and at ourselves and hold ourselves accountable sometimes.
Research suggests that the last place that we look is internal, and this is what it sounds like. It can't be me.
Mm-hmm.
Deanna, this is what I found. Most of the time, it is me.
Yeah.
You know, so I've learned to look internal now. So that level of living or being willing to be comfortable being uncomfortable, that's my new comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I love being uncomfortable. And just when I get comfortable, life comes at me in different sections. Okay, Richard, here we go. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And so life doesn't care. It doesn't discriminate.
No,
we
it
all
does
get
not.
Our fair share of stuff we would rather not be contending with. So I often get a chance to apply that concept. But that's my new zone. Mm-hmm. That's my new comfort level now. And then I'm sure it's going to be stretched again. That is life.
Sounds like a healthy zone.
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
I like to think so. It keeps my stress level down. It keeps my blood pressure low. It keeps me with a good attitude, good demeanor. But like anyone, I do have my moments. But I refuse to have, respectfully, a bad day. I can have a bad moment. If something happened at 8 o'clock this morning, I'm upset, pissed off about it. Okay, I have every right to feel that way, and I allow myself to feel that. But if I'm upset about that same thing at 12 o'clock, that's on Richard. So I realize that I can change that. I can change it. Just change, shifting my mindset. The problem doesn't go away. I'm not ignoring it, but I am deciding on how much emotional energy I'm going to put into that. And I refuse to put all that emotional energy into that person or into that situation because it impacts my day. I have a negative attitude and I don't even want to be around myself at that particular moment. So I've learned how to better manage that. Again, I am still under construction, just for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always working on me. But these are the basic things I use, and I apply them in the classroom and the coaching opportunities I have with my clients.
So if you're talking to our listeners and you're saying, this is the first step, and this is the second step to doing what you're doing, what do those steps look like? Because I feel like we need to be very clear to our listeners. All this is great information. It's very powerful information. But where do we start?
I would start by internalizing yourself, just that sort of self-assessment. So I write about this in my book. I ask people to assess their level of self-confidence. And so this is what we know, that our self-talk has a direct impact on our self-confidence. Our self-talk is a conversation that we have to ourselves, with ourselves, about ourselves. No one hears that except for us, but whew, that voice is very loud. And so I ask people to assess their self-talk in one of three colors, red, yellow, or green. So red would be majority of that self-talk, the conversation that you have to yourself with yourself about yourself is red. That's negative. It's really horrible. Yellow, you're more of a hybrid. You have your good moments, your bad moments. And green would be the majority of that conversation is positive. So I just ask people to rate their self-talk based on red, yellow, or green. And again, interesting, I write about this in my book, and it's almost true every single time. So when I'm asking my audience, my adult audience, to rate their color, most people are yellow to red. Most. 75 to 80% of the time. And so how we see ourselves, that's the challenge. But then I ask them, well, where does that come from? Sometimes it's what our parents have said or someone of influence. But it's also it's the social norms in terms of this is how my life should be. And because it's not measuring up to X, Y, or Z, I feel this way about myself. And that doesn't feel good. And so I'm on a mission to help change that trajectory, because if you don't see yourself, or you see yourself less than, and you're always falling short and you're not good enough, you don't measure up, that has an impact on you personally as well on how you come across to others, because you don't feel adequate. That's not a good feeling. It's a horrible feeling. So I've learned to reverse that with affirmations. Affirmations been around literally for ever since I was born, forever, right? And affirmation, simply put, is saying something positive about yourself, countering that negative thing. So one of the things people I've learned they do not enjoy is public speaking, right? As an example.
Sure. It's very common.
One person told me, Richard, I would rather eat nails than do public speaking, right? And just for clarity, that they're a really good public speaker. It's just how they see themselves and that level of judgment. So instead of saying to myself, I'm a horrible public speaker, I would say things like this. I'm a great public speaker. When people hear me, they gravitate to what I have to say. So whatever that negative things that we're saying about ourselves, I'm encouraging people to convert that to a positive affirmation in the present moment as if it is happening right now, and do that. And you'd be amazed. Now, I heard this statement before, and I can't recall the psychologist, but the statement is, we would never talk to other people the way we talk about ourselves. We would never say those things to other people. And so I've learned, Deanna, is to stop saying negative things about me. It starts with me. I can't control what other people say. Mm-hmm. I'm not even concerned, respectfully.
I agree.
But I will control what I say to myself about myself. That I do have control. Mm-hmm. People say, I'm an idiot, I'm stupid, I'm crazy, I can't believe I did that. I mean, just all these negative things people are saying about themselves.
Right.
And they're completely unaware.
Mm-hmm.
I was speaking with a colleague of mine last night, and the comment was, let me get this right. She was sharing her story on and on. And her comment was, well, I'm just rambling, right? This was her comment. And so my response was, yeah, I guess you are. And she said, Richard, I can't believe you said that. I'm like, well, I didn't. You said that you were rambling, and I just confirmed what you said. I didn't say it. That's what you said.
Sure.
Right? Change that conversation you're having to yourself with yourself about yourself. And I would not confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what you think about yourself, who am I to say any different? So just little subtle things like that that we miss.
I have a funny saying, and it catches people off guard every time. My friend or somebody I'm talking to says something negative about themselves. And I look at them and I say, stop talking bad about my friend.
Oh, I like that.
And they look at me like, wait, what do you mean? You're my friend, right? Stop talking bad about my friend.
Yes.
And so, it stops them in their tracks.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah.
Right. They're like, who is she talking about? I'm the friend. Hello.
Yeah.
But I like that. Again, we miss that sometimes. So
yes.
Those conversations, and of course, I'm a faith-based guy. I'm a believer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not preaching. I'm not evangelizing, to each his own. But I believe that we should believe in something. And so I do believe in God, and that's my foundation. Again, not perfect, not preaching, but I think holding on to something bigger than us, understanding this whole complexity of life, why we're here, the purpose of life. I ponder that a lot too.
Sure. Thank you, Richard. This has been so amazing, so insightful, so informative, and so inspiring. Tell me something good.
Today is December 4th. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. I feel good. And I am going to share that version of me with whomever I interact with. Life is fantastic in spite of the difficulties, the challenges, the uncertainty. I'm encouraging folks to embrace the moment. I'm not going to say treat others the way you would want to be treated. I'm going to encourage you to treat people the way they want to be treated. That's a big difference there. When I treat people the way I want to be treated, they may not like that. But when I treat people the way they want to be treated, it usually works. And then, of course, my mantra is expect great things to happen. That's what I would leave you with. And thank you for your time, Deanna.
Yes, thank you. I feel like there's another session coming.
I sure
soon.
Hope so. I look forward to it. I really enjoy the conversation with you. You make it easy. And, of course, I'm a fan of yours by all means.
Thank you, Richard.
And I look forward to our continued collaboration and interaction.
You bet.